Hello and welcome to another episode of the Wounded Blue Hour here on the America Out Loud Network. I am your host, Randy Sutton, a 34-year police law enforcement veteran, 10 years in New Jersey, 24 Las Vegas Metro Police Department, the author of a number of books, including the soon-to-be-released Rescuing 911, The Fight for America's Safety. And I'm also the founder of the Wounded Blue, the National Assistance and Support Organization for Injured and Disabled Law Enforcement Officers, a nationwide charity that helps injured and disabled officers across the country. I always have a great guest, and there is one waiting for us in the green room. But before I bring him in, once again, we begin this show with what I call our reality check, the violence that continues to affect the lives of the American law enforcement officer. And I got to tell you, we had a couple weeks where we didn't even have any names to read, which, of course, I was celebrating. But in the last couple weeks, it has been deadly for the American law enforcement officer. And as such, I have a number of names to read and to eulogize. So, of course, that was me not doing what I'm supposed to do and mute my phone. So let's begin. Correctional Officer Andrew John Fought of the Illinois Department of Corrections in Illinois. Correctional Sergeant Drew Fought was killed in a vehicle collision in St. Mary in Olney. At 7:30 a.m., Sergeant Fought was en route to a tactical call at the Lawrence Conventional Center. As he passed another vehicle in heavy fog, he crashed into another car. The driver of the other car sustained minor injuries. Correctional Sergeant Fought served the Illinois Department of Corrections for 6 years and was assigned to the tactical response team. He is survived by his parents and 8 siblings. Correctional Sergeant Andrew John Fought, Illinois Department of Corrections, Illinois. End of watch Monday, April 8th, 2024. Special Agent Derek Sean Baer, United States Postal Service, Inspector General. Special Agent Sean Baer was killed in a head-on vehicle crash at the intersection of Route 9 and Oakley Drive in Ranson, West Virginia at 1:50 p.m. An oncoming vehicle traveling at a high rate of speed ran a red light, then crossed the median and struck Agent Baer's department vehicle head-on. Both were killed in the crash. Agent Baer was a United States Coast Guard veteran. He has served with the Postal Service Officer Inspector General for over 9 years and is a federal law enforcement officer at Department of State for more than 4, Department of Commerce for 1 year, and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission for over 1 year. He is survived by his wife and 3 children. Special Agent Derek Sean Baer, United States Postal Service. End of watch Tuesday, April 9th, 2024. Chief of Police William Anthony Anderson, Sr., Northeast Mississippi Community College in Mississippi. Chief of Police Anthony Anderson suffered a fatal heart attack while working extra hours at the National Junior College Athletics Association basketball tournament in Boonville. Chief Anderson had been working his regular hours and added the additional college tournament games to his schedule, as well as high school and junior high games. He was working his 5th game in 4 days when he collapsed 2:30 p.m. Despite life-saving measures, he was unable to be revived. The chief had served with the Northeast Mississippi Community College campus police for almost 10 years, previously served as the chief of the police of the Verona Police Department and with the Union County Sheriff's Office. He is survived by his wife, 2 daughters, a son, and grandchildren. Chief of Police William Anthony Anderson, Sr., Northeast Mississippi Community College Police Department. End of watch Saturday, March 9th, 2024. Lieutenant Rodney Osborne, Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections in Ohio. Lieutenant Rodney Osborne was shot and killed during a training exercise at the Corrections Training Academy. He was training at the tactical firing range just before 11:30 a.m. when the incident occurred. He was training lieutenant has served with the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections for 13 years, was assigned to the Southern Ohio Correctional Facility serving on the Honor Guard, the Special Response Team, and the statewide Special Tactics and Response Team. In the week prior to his death, he had received the Employee of the Year recognition. Lieutenant Rodney Osborne, Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections, Ohio, excuse me, End of Watch Tuesday, April 9th, 2024. Police Officer Joseph McKinney, Memphis Police Department, Tennessee. Police Officer Joseph McKinney was shot and killed while investigating a suspicious vehicle at the intersection of Charter Avenue and Horn Lake Road at about 2 a.m. He and other officers were approaching the vehicle when the occupants opened fire on them. Officers returned fire before the car fled. The officers pursued the vehicle and took two wounded subjects into custody after it stopped. The adult subject died of his gunshot wounds, and the juvenile suffered critical gunshot wounds. The adult subject was out on bond from an arrest the previous month in which he had been charged with possession of modified semi-automatic weapon, two counts of grand larceny related to vehicle thefts. Officer McKinney was transported to the Regional 1 Hospital, where he succumbed to his injuries. Two other officers were wounded. Officer McKinney has served with Memphis PD for over 3 years. He is survived by his wife. Police Officer Joseph McKinney, Memphis Police Department, Tennessee, End of Watch Friday, April 12th, 2024. Police Officer Ross Bartlett, Ceresco Police Department, Nebraska. Police Officer Ross Bartlett was killed when his patrol car was struck by another vehicle as he conducted a traffic stop on southbound Highway 77 at 7:35 p.m. He was sitting in his patrol car during the stop when a pickup truck struck his vehicle in the rear, pushing it into the car he had stopped. Bystanders attempted life-saving measures before he was flown to Bryan Health West Campus, where he succumbed to his injuries. The driver of the car he had stopped suffered serious injuries as well. Officer Bartlett has served with the Ceresco Police Department for 7 years and also concurrently served as an investigator with the Nebraska Department of Correctional Services for 7 years. He had served a total of 30 years in law enforcement, previously served with the Valentine Police, Boone County Police, Madison Police, Madison County Sheriff's Office, and Newman Grove Police. He served as a volunteer firefighter as well. Police Officer Ross Bartlett, Ceresco Police Department, Nebraska, End of Watch, Friday, April 12th, 2024. Sergeant William Marty Jackson II, Winchester Police Department, Kentucky. Sergeant Marty Jackson suffered a fatal heart attack after arresting a subject for disorderly conduct, public intoxication, and resisting arrest. 3:56 a.m., Sergeant Jackson responded to a call for service at the Clark Regional Medical Center for a subject who was combative. The subject resisted arrest, and a struggle ensued until additional officers were able to help subdue the subject. Afterwards, Sergeant Jackson felt shortness of breath and chest pains. 7 p.m., he suffered a medical emergency while in his police cruiser. Sergeant Jackson was transported to an area hospital where, despite life-saving measures, he was unable to be revived. Sergeant Jackson has served the Winchester Police for almost 47 years. Previously served as the agent's police chief. He had previously served with the Paris Police Department for almost 4 years. Sergeant William Marty Jackson II, Winchester Police, Kentucky. End of watch Sunday, April 14th, 2024. I mean, reading these names is shocking, the number of officers who died in the line of duty in just the last couple of weeks. Lieutenant Michael Husak, Onondaga County Sheriff's Office, New York. Lieutenant Michael Husak and Police Officer Michael Jensen of the Syracuse Police Department were shot and killed while attempting to locate a subject who had led officers on a vehicle pursuit earlier in the night. The subject had fled from Syracuse police officers when they attempted a traffic stop. As officers terminated the pursuit and then went to the home on Darien Drive, in Salina where the vehicle is registered. The officers requested assistance from the Onondaga County Sheriff's Office after locating the vehicle at the home and observing firearms inside of it. As they set up a perimeter around the home, officers heard the subject manipulating a firearm inside. Lieutenant Husak was in the backyard of a neighboring home when the man emerged and opened fire on him with an AR-15, fatally wounding him. The man then went to the front of the home where he exchanged shots with other officers, fatally wounding Officer Jensen. The subject was also shot and killed during the shootout. Lieutenant Husak had served with the Onondaga Sheriffs for 16 years. He had previously served with the Moyers Corners Fire Department. Lieutenant Michael Husak, Onondaga Sheriff's Office, New York. End of watch Sunday, April 14th, 2024. And Police Officer Michael Jensen of the Syracuse Police Department, same set of circumstances. Officer Jensen has served with the Syracuse Police for 2.5 years. Police Officer Michael E. Jensen, Syracuse Police, New York. End of watch Sunday, April 14th, 2024. And the last name I have to read this week is Deputy Sheriff Fred Fissler of the Hendricks County Sheriff's Office in Indiana. Deputy Sheriff Fred Fissler was electrocuted when he came in contact with live wires investigating a crash scene at State Road 267, County Road 300 near Plainfield at 11:57 p.m. While on the scene, witnesses noticed Deputy Fissler on the ground near the power lines and used his radio for help. Deputy Fissler was transported to Ezekiel Hospital in critical condition, did not survive. Deputy Fissler was a United States Marine Corps veteran, had served with the Hendricks County Sheriff's Office for over 2.5 years, and Deputy Sheriff Fred Fissler, Hendricks County Sheriff's Office, Indiana, end of watch Tuesday, April 16th, 2024. Each of these officers gave their lives in the line of duty, protecting and serving their communities. And that brings to total, just for this year so far, 42 law enforcement officers who have given their lives in the line of duty in 2024. May they rest in peace. Let me bring in our guest, Travis Yates. Travis has been a guest on this show before. His breadth of knowledge in law enforcement is pretty incredible. He spent decades as a major in the Tulsa, Oklahoma Police Department. He has been a police trainer for decades as well, also a prolific author. And he is dedicated to the concepts of law enforcement and is very, very creative in his approach to some really important topics. So welcome to the show, Travis.
Randy, it's a pleasure to be here, sir. Thank you so much for having me.
So I want to let the audience know that you and I just spent several days together at the Eureka County Sheriff's Department in Northern Nevada at their leadership conference, where I did some training for the Wounded Blue, and you are doing some training for your company. And I got to tell you, man, I had the best time at, working with Sheriff Jesse Watts up there in Eureka, and what a cool town it was and a great experience.
Yeah, it certainly is a blessing, you know, and leadership in law enforcement has been so weak and cowardly in recent years. It sure is a breath of fresh air to be able to spend this time with a solid leadership team and solid agency, and obviously a great community that comes alongside that. So and you being here was a bonus for me, sir. So it's been a great time. I'm still up here. We've still got some work to do, but I'm looking forward to it.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you one little bit. Now, you know, one of the things that I find so fascinating about your career, you spent many, many years. I think you were at 30 years, if I remember correctly, with the Tulsa Police Department, and you had a ton of jobs with a very large police agency. So I just want the audience to get to know you just a little bit. Talk about where you grew up, what it was that kind of inspired you to join law enforcement as your life's career?
Well, I grew up on the West Coast. I'm actually, I was born on the West Coast. You can't tell that by my accent now, but my father was a Los Angeles County deputy. And when I was a young boy, he threw a dart at a dartboard and I ended up in Fort Smith, Arkansas. And he went to work there at the police department. And so I grew up, I didn't need Superman or Batman, man. I grew up around my father and all of his police officer friends and buddies. My dad worked undercover in narcotics work for most of my childhood. If you can imagine that type of work in the 80s, right? So it was certainly a great time for me. And I really had no interest in going into law enforcement. My father basically said, whatever you want to do, he'd support me. Never really pushed one thing or another. But then one fateful night when I was 19 years old, I went on a police ride-along. And that changed my life forever because it was one of these ride-alongs, Randy, as you know, they're not always created the same. Sometimes they're boring. Sometimes they're exciting. This one was excitement on steroids this night. And I can remember looking over at the officer and I said, do they pay you for this? And he says, every 2 weeks. Yep, I get paid for it. And then and there, I was in college at the time, changed my degree to criminal justice and never looked back. And really just ended up in Tulsa because I started applying everywhere. And when you're 21 years old, not everybody would take a 21-year-old. My dream job was probably the Arkansas State Police. You know, when you're growing up seeing troopers, but they said, hey, we don't take 21-year-olds. And then my second dream job was the federal government, DEA, all that stuff. And they said, we don't take 21-year-olds. And so I was just going to get on at an agency and work a few years and move on. And Tulsa hired me when I was 21. But as the story goes, I met a girl and I blinked. And 30 years later, here I am. But, you know, in Tulsa, if you told me as that young man that I would have done all these things I've done, I would have said you were crazy. I just wanted to learn to be a good cop. I love that work. But just things landed in front of me. I had opportunities that people presented to me, and I took it. I worked a bunch of different assignments, promoted up the ranks at a relatively young age. I was a street sergeant at 25 years old in a big city. And so I had to learn the hard way of ups and downs of leadership and just progress through the ranks. And through that time, I've been on the road about 22 years teaching and training and consulting, and now I do that full time. I stayed about 30 years in 1 month. That was long enough for me. But that time period, as you know, Randy, is interesting because in 1993 and 2023 is about as different as the profession could have gotten. And so I have a pretty unique perspective on what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, and what we need to get back to. And those names you read is one example of what we're doing wrong. There's so many things we ought to be doing as a profession to improve the workplace safety, to improve conditions, to improve leadership. And just like you, Randy, I'm on a mission to do that. And I can't thank you enough because throughout that time, throughout those 30 years, you were always a huge inspiration. We've known each other for about 15 years. Always been an inspiration and pushed me. And I certainly appreciate that.
And you have had a stellar career in so many different ways, and your dedication to the profession, and not just the profession. The profession almost sounds sterile, but your dedication to the men and women who are serving in that profession is what sets you above and beyond so many other law enforcement leaders and trainers. You take training about as seriously as anybody I've ever seen, and your innovative processes and your ideas is what I find so interesting, and why I really wanted you to come on the show today, because not only are we going to talk about training, because you and I both know, and any cop that's listening to this knows that it is training that will determine your success, will determine your survival when you're looking at a 30, 35-year police career. Training is the essential component. And yet, you and I also know this, that especially when you're looking at budgets and you're looking at the budget cuts, what is the first thing that cities and agencies cut when they have to do budget cuts?
Yeah, it's the core. It's the foundation. It's the training, right? And it's crazy to think, but I've seen that throughout my career. Even today, I think the general public thinks that we're trained at this high level. Generally, they watch TV or Hollywood. The fact is, most cops on the streets today are getting less than 20 hours of training a year in most states. There are states that don't even require any training per year, Illinois being one of them, which is always interesting when the politicians there want to scream about police and they are funding absolutely zero for that profession. So we're fortunate that we're sort of those third-party trainers, and some agencies will bring us in and know that it's important. But there are so many officers out there that are struggling because really they're left on their own to train themselves at a high level, and that's very unfortunate.
And then when something goes wrong and they get involved in a serious use of force incident where sometimes they have to take a human life, and the machine, which I will refer to it as the law enforcement slash prosecutorial splash, or excuse me, slash city government, that machine, that component is like a meat grinder. And the first thing that they will do is throw that officer to the wolves, because it was they who failed that officer and failed the community because of their lack of taking training seriously. And that's one of the things that I know you find incredibly offensive, as I do.
Well, it goes even deeper than that. These same politicians will scream. They'll scream about, officers may not be able to perform correctly. They'll scream about officers enforcing certain laws. They'll talk about terms like over-policing. They'll talk about police accountability. Guess who has the responsibility for all of that? The very people saying that. We do have accountability to every agency in this country. It goes all the way through the chain of command to the mayor and city council. Or if you're in a sheriff's department, of course, the council or the folks that are in charge of that. So we have more accountability with more folks looking at us than anybody before. Add cameras on top of that. So the people that say this, you have to understand, they're the ones responsible for either good policing or bad policing. But it's just political expedient to blame the line officer for these things that occur. And it's interesting, there's been a lot of talk lately about, disparities and crimes and arrests. Guess who makes the laws and guess who tells us to enforce the laws? That's right. The same politicians that are then saying we shouldn't be enforcing those laws. And I say, here's my challenge. Hey, politician, if you don't like us enforcing laws, you ban the law. You make it legal. You get rid of the law because we're just doing what you have tasked us with to do. And when it's expedient for you to avoid blame, you then end up blaming us.
That's one of the things that I've seen, especially ever since the madness of the George Floyd fiction that literally, created an environment in this country of violence that we haven't seen probably in history of America. And the reality is that it was the political environment which took what really in essence was an innocuous incident that probably wouldn't have ever even made the paper had it not been for the sociological influences and the political environment that caused what is essentially one of the greatest fictions that led to what we call persecution by prosecution of four officers who are now serving prison terms. And I know that you find that as offensive as I do.
Yeah, and listen, I want to be careful about blaming politicians and blaming the media because they're always to blame. But ultimately, much of what you've seen in recent years is our doing. We had leaders in our profession that enabled that. And propaganda is a whole nother arm of that. We need leaders to fight against that propaganda. But yes, the Floyd incident, we could talk hours on that. If people are interested, go watch The Fall of Minneapolis. You can see that at thefallofminneapolis.com. And you should be outraged if you have a soul. If you have any logic, you should be outraged on what happened because that incident in Minneapolis, Minnesota changed the world. It still changed the world, and nobody is being held accountable for that created that. But you have to understand that there's a larger picture here, Randy. I'm sure you're aware of that. But so when the citizens are watching this chaos on television, whether it's the looting of stores, or whether it's high crime, or whether it's all of these things. You have to understand there are folks manipulating this for a reason. You have to ask yourself why. Because law enforcement knows how to reduce crime. We reduced crime to record lows in the 90s because we had the tools and we had the support to do that. And so when they start, you notice the politicians don't say abolish the police anymore. They don't say defund the police anymore, although they once did. That became politically, it would hurt them. And so now they're doing it in other ways. They're more sinister ways. So when you start taking tools away, you start taking training away, you start taking, you know, police tactics that have worked for years away, and you try to tell, you make a profession that they're unable to do their job. And so you want to, one of those, a recruiting issue or a retention issue. Nobody's going to do a job that's impossible. If you made an accountant's job impossible, good luck finding accountants. If you called lawyers racist when they walked in the office, good luck finding lawyers. Well, they've done that to this profession. And it's our leaders that have almost always enabled that. And so the interesting thing about the Floyd case, and I want people to think about this.
Well, we're going to have to take a hard break. We're at our hard break time, but we're going to come back, continue with that. And then we're also going to talk about, I know, one of your favorite topics, and that's recruiting. So let's take a quick break.
Cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death and disability. Lifestyle changes are critical, but you can also support your heart with concentrated nutrients. Healthy Cell created Heart and Vascular Health to support cholesterol and blood pressure with CoQ10, vitamin K2, resveratrol, and soluble fiber. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow. Get heart healthy. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Take action today. Visit HealRight.com/OutLoud or AmericaOutLoud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Who's got time for a nasal invasion messing up your lifestyle? Crush those nasties before they become a problem. For a limited time, when you add the new Cofix RX throat spray to your order with the coupon code OUTLOUD, you'll receive 20% off the entire purchase. Go to AmericaOutLoud.shop. That's AmericaOutLoud.shop and use coupon code OUTLOUD.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
Expert opinions, honest debate, and in-depth investigations are what you've come to expect from AmericaOutLoud.news. We don't shy away from speaking the truth boldly and plainly. All that's missing is the propaganda that has infected legacy and social media. Get the best of down and dirty, wholesome American speak. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Hi, this is Randy Sutton, founder of The Wounded Blue. If you are a law enforcement officer now or have been, I want you to listen to this. The 4th Annual National Law Enforcement Survival Summit will be hosted in Las Vegas, September 26th through the 29th at the fabulous Ahern Hotel. This is an incredible conference, every aspect of surviving a law enforcement career. And we have some incredible speakers, including Travis Howes, who, if you've never seen him speak, you're in for a treat. And all of the speakers are dedicated to improving the lives of injured and disabled officers, whether those injuries are physical or emotional and psychological. But this is designed for current officers and those who have served. Go to thewoundedblue.org and register now. It's only $325. It will change your life. Hi, this is Randy Sutton from the Wounded Blue. Every day, law enforcement officers put their lives on the line to protect our communities. Unfortunately, many of these brave men and women suffer injuries, both physical and emotional, in the line of duty. That's where the Wounded Blue comes in. The Wounded Blue is on a mission to improve the lives of injured and disabled law enforcement officers. Through our dedicated peer advocate support program and extensive community outreach efforts, we are working tirelessly to destigmatize mental health within the law enforcement community. We believe that those who serve and protect us should never be forgotten and never feel alone. That's why we're reaching out to you, our community, for support. Your donations can make a real difference in the lives of these officers and their families. With your help, we can provide vital resources, support services, and advocacy for those who have sacrificed so much for our safety. Together, we can ensure that our injured and disabled law enforcement officers receive the care and respect they deserve. Join us in honoring their service and supporting their journey to healing. Donate to the Wounded Blue today and make a meaningful impact in the lives of those who protect and serve. Thank you for your generosity and your support. This is Randy Sutton. I want to tell you about another company that supports law enforcement and does a hell of a job in protecting the men and women who serve. It's called OfficerPrivacy.com. Now, what is OfficerPrivacy.com? It is a service that helps to keep you safe by scrubbing information off of the internet that is identifying you, where you live, and other personal information. I had no idea of how much information is on the internet about me. And that means it's on the internet about you as well. Pete James, who is a retired police officer out of California, created OfficerPrivacy.com. And I am a very happy subscriber to this service. He removed like 36 different identifying pieces of information about me, including where I live. Well, every cop that I know doesn't want bad guys being able to find them. And that's if you have served or you're serving now. And it is not an expensive proposition. So I urge you, go to OfficerPrivacy.com, see who they are and the services that they offer. They are huge supporters of the Wounded Blue, and Pete works tirelessly to help officers take advantage of the service that he provides. And by the way, all of the personnel that he hires to go into the internet and get that information off of it are all former cops or current cops. So that's the only people that he trusts to work to keep your information off of the internet. So go to OfficerPrivacy.com. Tell him Randy sent you. Maybe he'll buy me a beer sometime. Maybe. So that's it. I would want to get back to Travis and get back to this conversation, which I could literally talk, Travis, to you for hours. Actually, we have talked for hours. So we've got a limited amount of time. But before we go on as far as the historical stuff, you know, one of the things that you and I have talked about in length is that there is a crisis. There's a law enforcement crisis right now in the retention of good officers and also the recruitment of officers that's facing this entire nation. And I think one of the things that is really critical for the public to know is you can't just put an ad in the paper and have an interview and give a guy a badge and a gun. It doesn't work like that. There is a massive process that has to take place in order to put people behind that badge that have the best chance of having a successful career that will not sully that badge. So we have found, especially since the George Floyd mess, that cops are either leaving at unprecedented rates, leaving the profession really lacking in qualified personnel. So, and I keep on hearing, and I know you do, that there people just aren't coming to take the job. That their recruitment is so down because there's, you know, nobody wants to be a cop anymore. But you have created an innovative process that has, I mean, you have actually figured out how to get recruits that are qualified into the ranks. And I was so excited to hear what your tactics were. I would really love for you because I want to get the word out as much as humanly possible about the tactics, and you have now created a methodology for police agencies across the country to utilize your services and to start bringing back quality recruits into the law enforcement world. If you would, let's talk about, first of all, the challenges that you saw and what you're doing now to combat it.
Well, I don't want to take the credit for it. I basically recognized the problem about 10 years ago. People conveniently use the George Floyd incident as an excuse. But about 10 years ago, if you remember, Randy, we hired 100,000 cops in the 94 Cops Grant. A lot of those folks started leaving their profession, but our techniques and tactics never changed. The truth is, we never had to recruit. You could set back and you would just get applicants in law enforcement. But the problem is the generation has changed. And so you've got to then actually recruit. And so there has to be a big shift in our philosophy. Instead of having a fancy website and think people are just going to apply to you, you've got to actually recruit. Because we really didn't have recruiters in the past. We had people that would market our agencies. Hey, come to our agency versus that agency. Because we had such a big, you know, we had so many people interested in the profession. So through the years, yes, the Floyd incident didn't matter, but we already were seeing a decline and agencies really weren't shifting off of it. So I saw this at my agency. We were spending, you know, thousands of dollars on a website and a recruiting video, and they would all brag about how many web hits they were getting, but they could never tell me how many candidates they were getting. And then I started seeing a couple companies that popped up in 2020, 2021 that were pushing, you know, expensive websites, recruiting videos. Obviously, everybody's seen them, right? Washington, D.C. Metro just was named the recruiting video of the year by Police One. They're at the lowest staffing in history. And nobody was putting two and two together saying, well, this isn't really working. It can't be the website. It looks great. Well, people don't need to understand, nobody works in law enforcement because they saw a website. Nobody goes to work in law enforcement because they saw a video. And so I've been talking about this for a while, and I located a company, a friend of mine founded it, he's retired called Trooper, called Safeguard Recruiting. And he kind of put his teeth on the truck driving side, where it's really a challenge in the truck driving industry. They have about 100% turnover in a lot of those companies. And so they don't have websites, they don't have videos, but it was actually recruiting. The interesting thing, Randy, is we understand recruiting when it comes to our executives. They hire recruiting firms, headhunter firms, to go find chiefs of police, right? To go find deputy chiefs. But when it comes to the line officers, the recruit officers, we just think we can throw a website up in a video and call it good. Well, clearly it's not working. Almost anybody that could have done it has spent a lot of money. And we've talked to clients that have spent millions of dollars on this stuff. Their recruiting actually got worse. So what Safeguard did is, instead of just stealing people's money, right? But if you're a marketing company, you don't care if an agency gets staffed up. You're a marketing company. You want to keep those dollars rolling. Well, these guys, it's law enforcement owned, much like Pete and Officer Privacy, and they really care about the profession. So when I saw them, I said, hey, I'll help you any way I can, because I'm concerned. If we don't fix this issue, by the way, politicians don't exactly want it fixed. As I said, this is a side note of reimagining police, abolishing police, defunding police. If the fewer we go in ranks, the less effective we can be. And we're a few years away from major police departments literally going out. You look at Seattle, Portland, Minneapolis, we're a few years, they're already contracting with sheriff's departments now in parts of their cities. So we're a few years away from those departments not existing, because you can't catch up at a certain point unless you really dial in recruiting. So what they do is they literally go out and find candidates, people that are interested in that particular police department, and they bring them into that department. Then they tell the recruiters, it's time to recruit them. Here's the names. It's like somebody walking up to your recruiting booth and going, I'm interested. Well, that doesn't work anymore. This thing called the internet, right? So you go, they take where people are, where the candidates are, which is typically social media. They put the ad in front of them. Instead of the ad just going to the website, right? Well, oh, great. The ad went to the website. What does that matter? They just say, if you're interested, give us your information. And they are literally staffing up agencies across the country. I just got off a phone call with these guys a few hours ago. They had a client. They're getting, for every $3 spent, they're getting a candidate. Now, that's insane, right? They're working with one of the largest agencies in the country. It's a top five agency where they spent millions of dollars on marketing, didn't work, website and video, and they hired Safeguard. And they're sending them over 1,000 candidates a month. Now, it's going to be a two-year process because that's how far down they are in staffing. But they will staff up as long as they stick to the process. Now, what I love about them, Randy, is they don't just give you the product and walk away. It's actually a whole process. They have applicant tracking software because when you start getting hundreds of candidates, you better be able to track them. You better be able to communicate with them. They teach them sales because recruiting is sales. Okay, you're interested. Here's why you need to continue to apply and go through our process. And they line all this out. It's an entire process. In fact, what I do is I try to go in and I try to help the agency once they get started just to see how we can better the process, and we make it lean and efficient. And I'm working with the agency now and everything's going great. They're getting plenty of candidates, but they're like, listen, we're having a little bit of conversion problem getting them to apply. What's the problem? Well, I take one look at it and I say, well, it's easy. When they hit apply, they got to register their name with an email and a username and a password. And they got to go, you know, confirm it. I go, why is that there? Get rid of that. And then they get rid of that, all of a sudden the applicants start coming. They have to understand, as a profession, we're dealing with a different generation. Randy, you and I would apply to the police department. No one would call us for 6 months, but we sat there and wait because we wanted to work on that department so bad. You don't call a kid immediately now. You don't contact him immediately. They're moving on down the road. And so it's similar to anybody listening to this that's ever applied for a university. If you applied for a university, you're getting an immediate email, you're getting an immediate phone call, and they continue that communication process. So we're trying to educate people with the process, in addition to the software, in addition to the advertising and recruiting. And when people buy off on it, Randy, I'm not kidding you. I talked to an agency up in Virginia a couple of weeks ago, and this captain started literally, he was emotional with me on the phone. After 1 week, he said he can't believe what he's got. He's been trying everything. He hadn't seen this many recruits in many, many years come in. And he was just so pleased that he had found them. And it's not rocket science, right? It's just recruiting. The problem is we're relying on marketing that's designed to sell a product to recruit. And so they're the only recruiting, not only are they the only recruiting company for law enforcement owned by law enforcement, they're the only recruiting company for law enforcement. Now, you got some folks that say they're recruiting, but when you dive down into it, they're marketing. They're selling you a fancy looking website, a jazzy looking little video, making you feel good about it. But where are the candidates? And I'll just give you one little tidbit here for the audience. If you don't believe me, they have all the data. They've ran over 300 recruiting campaigns for agencies. They're averaging $27 for a qualified applicant. I saw a department today that was offering a $40,000 bonus to get people into their department. And you take that $40,000, divide it by $27, you got yourself thousands of candidates to pick from. To me, that's a better process than just offering bonus money that, quite frankly, is a temporary fix, if a fix at all.
Well, you know, one of the things that, you know, in my career as a law enforcement officer is that we don't embrace change very well. You know, one of the things that Dr. Kevin Gilmartin, who you and I both know, wrote the book Emotional Survival for Law Enforcement. And one of the segments of his class that I remember, even from taking it 25 years ago, was talking about how police officers react to change. And he told this story, which is still indelibly set in my head, about this department that had multicolored pieces of paper on a carbon, you know, because that was in the days you actually used a pen and filled out, you know, paperwork. And so the different levels, different colors went to different parts of the department. And so they had used this one form, and I think that they had the color that was utilized was yellow. And then they switched and it was the same form, but the color of the paper was green. And when it did it, it threw the entire department into disarray, and the complaining and the misery that it caused, that instead of it being yellow, it was green, and the consternation that they eventually changed it back to yellow. And I think that that's such a huge illustration of the paradigm that law enforcement faces, because I guess it's a human nature thing. You know, everybody resists change, whether it's necessary or not. And so I find that it's fine. You know, when you're talking about, you're basically the golden goose of police recruiting, and you're still finding this disbelief that something this good could be this cheap and this effective. It's got to be terrible.
Well, it's the only goose. It's the only goose. And unfortunately, unlike the color paper, if we don't embrace this change, we're done, Randy. And what really makes me angry, and I mean angry, is when I hear chiefs just go, there's nothing we can do. We tried. It's just the environment. That is the most cowardly thing I ever thought of. We're in law enforcement. Your community needs you to be fully staffed. They need you to respond to their needs. And you better figure this out. And we have presented this on a silver platter. I even filmed a series of training videos that they can get for free at safeguardrecruiting.com. Just, if you don't believe me, watch the training videos, implement it yourself. You know, so these guys, I mean, these guys are incredible. They just literally onboarded an agency that didn't believe them. They said, I'll tell you what, we'll give you a month free. We'll show you exactly what we can do. And of course, they're going to have 20 candidates in the morning. And they're going to not even understand it. I talked to a client. We'd sent over 800 clients to him in 2 weeks. And literally the recruiter's like, who are these people? We don't understand this. And I go, yeah, because you're going to job fairs where you won't see 800 people in 20 years. We're taking this to where people are, which is the internet, and we're grabbing them. And they have to, by the way, it's not some scam. People see the ad and they have to put all their information in. They have to make sure they're qualified. Then it comes to them. And it's because we're weeding out a lot of people that fill that out. And then once you have the candidates, it's time to get them over to the department. It's time to do some work. And I'm excited and frustrated at the same time. I'm excited that Inova Solutions here. I'm very scared that people aren't going to accept the solution. We're going to keep on down this road because obviously most of the agencies are still think their fancy website and their fancy video is going to work. And if they do, I would just ask them this. Ask the company how many recruits I'm going to get for the website and video. And their answer is going to be, we don't know. You know, if you're doing a digital campaign with a marketing company, ask them, if I give you so much money, how many recruits will I get? And they better know. Safeguard Recruiting will tell you exactly. They'll tell you $1,000 is going to give you 50 candidates. You know, $2,000, 100 candidates. They'll give you the exact number of the people you can then put in on your agency. And so, and they know that because of all the campaigns they've done. They're data driven, and it is different. It is a change, but it's not really unique. It's just common sense, right? We want to lean the process out, get them through the process quick, get a quick phone call to them. Rain, I don't know if you know this stat, but if you don't call somebody in the first hour of an interest, that's why many people listening have, you know, maybe inquired on a website, they get an immediate phone call. If you don't call them in the first hour, for every hour after that, exponentially, it's a less chance that you're going to get them to make that decision. That's why a lot of these product companies understand that. And so we're just taking that to recruiting. It's literally that model we brought over to law enforcement. And if they grab it, I'm telling you, it's golden. It's a game changer. And I don't think anybody's going to compete with us because these companies are charging $100,000 for websites and videos. It's crazy. I mean, I'll just tell you one quick story. We had a department that I believe they were down 50 officers. And I think we told them for $64,000 solved. We know this from our data. You will be fully staffed for $64,000. And they said, and they paid a company $250,000 to do a website and video for them. And by the way, it's not going to solve their problem. We've already got clients that went down that road, then they ended up calling us later. And so I think what it is these marketing companies are slick. They put a nice website and video in front of a police chief, and they go, wow, it looks cool. It kind of makes me feel good. It will make everybody else feel good. And listen, marketing's great. Websites are great. Videos are great. It's just not recruiting. And we actually do that because there is a place for marketing, but it's not to recruit. It's once you get them in the pipeline to then further convince them to stay in the pipeline, because we do websites and videos too, but we don't do it on the front end. because that's not recruiting. We recruit the names, then we hit them with the marketing. And so it's exciting to be a part of it, Randy, because very seldom are you part of a solution, the solution that fixes a serious problem. But it's also frustrating because it seems to be that a lot of these agencies will not change, as you said.
So I'm going to guess that you're not planning any lip sync videos competitions. That's not probably in your wheelhouse.
If that would have worked, we would not have a recruiting problem, right? If our midnight basketball, lip singing, and all this crazy stuff. If that would have worked, then I wouldn't even be talking about recruiting. But it's that clearly doesn't work now.
So I hear you. So the other part of the training that you do. You know, saving lives is paramount in your mission, and you know your training company. You've been involved in training both at the department level and also as an external training resource for many, many years. Are you've got to be frustrated in the way some of the police agencies are responding to training, in that they're looking at the political correctness of training as opposed to the effectiveness of training. That's got to be a major frustration for you.
Yeah, it's pretty cowardly, if you ask me. A lot of our agencies, they're placating the training to what the community or a portion of the community is demanding, not considering, does that actually help our officers, right? And clearly, when you look at the data, it hasn't helped. From assault rates to the felonious death rates, they've been gradually increasing in recent years. And we were on a downward slide for many, many years until a few years ago. And one thing that frustrates me is I do one particular class called Seconds for Survival. It's nothing unique. It's a class that you and I got in the academy, Brandy. It's about human behavior, and human behaviors are predictable, and you can predict when violence is about to occur. And so this class revolves around that science that looks at indicators of human behavior to understand they're about to attack. And so if they're about to attack, I have to deal with this differently. And I started that about a decade ago, and, you know, 2/3 of the class have kind of been exposed to that. Every year since, up until now, almost no one in the class even knows what I'm talking about. In fact, I had a deputy chief the other day said he's never heard of this. And folks, they've been doing human indicators and studies on intuition and studies on behavior analysis for a century. The data's been out there for a century, and this used to be common practice in training when we actually cared about giving our officers training that made them safe and enabled them to survive. And if for your audience that may not understand, it's all about action, reaction. Action always beats reaction. So if you wait till you see a gun, you wait till you see a knife, you wait till you get struck, you can't catch up. And so what when you look at how human behaviors act and you look at the indicators that occur before the attack, you can get ahead of that attack. And all the data is telling us this is getting worse. I mean, if you've probably seen the YouTube videos where the officers aren't making any decisions and they're waiting until an attack. But I'll just give you one quick data point. In the last 5 years, Randy, for every officer that's been feloniously killed, only 21% even got a round off, meaning the vast majority didn't have a fighting chance. And that is all because they're waiting for an attack to make a decision. And if you wait that long, it's too late. If our leaders cared about their personnel, they would expose everybody to this training. It doesn't have to be my training, go anywhere else, but that it's a science-based class. We say we believe in the science, right? We need to give our officers this material. And so that's just one thing, right? Everything else I teach, I've seen a downward slide. You know, I teach a leadership class. I can count on one hand how many chiefs want to go to that, right? Because they know it all. And we're into this feel-good stuff, right? We want things to feel good. It's emotion-based. But we need to really be looking at, does this work? And I would just subscribe to this. If our leadership training had worked, we would not have gone through the last 5 years, period. And so things are clearly wrong, but we have to be able to look ourselves in the mirror, Randy, not out the window blaming others. Look ourselves in the mirror and say, what can we do to fix it? And I'm so fortunate for you and so many others are trying to actually do that.
So as we wrap up the show today, how can people find you, find the information about the recruiting and about your training?
Well, the easiest way to get hold of me is go to travisyates.org. That will branch you off into our weekly articles and our podcast. You can always email me right there from there and talk about the recruiting. If you want to go directly to the recruiting company, you can ask for me or ask for Doug that owns that. Just go to safeguardrecruiting.com. But if you don't remember that, just hit me up at travisyates.org. Send a message through the website. They'll send it over to get you on board. The positive thing is no matter how dire it is, Randy, they can fix that. They just got a client on board. I'm not going to name the city. They're down 42%. It's a large agency. They're down 42%, and they were really kind of freaked out about it, rightfully so. But we said, listen, just do what we say. We're going to fix it. It may take a year or two. Do what we say you're going to fix it. We know this for a fact. And so there's no reason why every agency should not be fully staffed up. That's an excuse to say there's a crisis. There's not a crisis. Your leadership matters, but there is a way to do this. It's just a different way than we know. So, yeah, I would welcome anybody just reach out to me. If you have a question, just reach out to me. I'll help you any way that I can.
And I'm also going to plug lawofficer.com. The lawofficer.com is one of the premier sources of accurate law enforcement news. And that is also a product of Travis Yates. So I urge you to go to lawofficer.com and get your law enforcement news off of that. And Travis, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join me here at The Voice that helps American law enforcement officers spiritually, physically, emotionally, and being a part of the support that you have for the Wounded Blue. And let me make an announcement. Travis Yates is the newest member of the board of directors of our incredible organization, thewoundedblue.org.
Well, Randy, thank you. And it's a career high for me that you just said that. There's no more honor to be involved in your incredible organization. And just thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks again. So as we wrap it up, I urge you to go to thewoundedblue.org, see who we are, see what we do, hit that donate button. If you are a law enforcement officer and you're struggling, please remember this. Our motto is very, very, very important to us. It's what we live by. Never forgotten, never alone. And our entire team is made up of law enforcement officers who have been shot or stabbed or beaten or run over or face serious psychological trauma and come out on the other side. There is no other organization like it. We are the Thin Blue Line family that you were promised. Go to thewoundedblue.org or 877-TWB-TALK. 877-TWB-TALK is our hotline. We are available for you 7 days a week, 24/7. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Thank you for joining me here again at the Wounded Blue Hour. Stay safe. See you next week.